You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network. Visit jabberjawmedia.com for more shows like this one.
Here we go. It's the X-Man podcast. It's your boy, Doc Coyle. How are y'all living? You living good? You living large? Well, I'm glad. I'm glad to hear that. I'm doing all right. It's almost 3 in the morning in a hotel in Amarillo, Texas. Tejas. Amarillo. And knee deep in this Bad Wolves headline tour. Got about 4 shows left to go. Few days ago, hit my breaking point. I think all the dudes in the band hit our breaking point. We were just exhausted. It was every show has been like 100 degrees. And, you know, these are busy, long, long days. And I think sharing space, being amongst one another, enjoying the pressures of just the day-to-day, you know, it gets at people, stresses arise. And it's kind of interesting. You know, I've been thinking about what I'm going to talk about on today's podcast, and I have like a few different things going on, and some of it was inspired about what's going on the road and kind of feeling beat down. But then something kind of bigger, broader theme kind of came to me, you know, about just generally seeing and experiencing and noticing people being stressed out about things and being angry. You know, and it made me think about what are the things that we actually should be worried about or that we should be angry about? Because lately I find myself very, I don't know, just kind of calm. And it's interesting to be a little bit dispassionate when others seem to be kind of losing it. Like even last night, like some random crazy psycho dude like attacked our merch guy and our bass player, and everyone else is like, let's beat his ass, let's kill this motherfucker. And I feel like almost like a passenger in a ride where I'm just seeing the you know, the furies of people, and I don't get affected in that same way. And me, I'm only thinking about the logical way to make sure nothing bad happens and kind of think rationally, and it makes me think a little bit about the state of affairs politically in the country, because you guys know I'm on the Twitter sphere. I enjoy the rabble, and you get to see the tenor, right? Like, so I think what's been going on lately, the theme of the week, recent week, has been about civility, you know, and there was a poll that went around that people thought, X amount of people think we're gonna, you know, we're likely to have a civil war. And my response was, we're kind of already in a civil war, right? But it's not a physical war. It's like a war of ideas. And it's, I've noticed, at least on the left side, is people are like really losing it. Like if you could go watch the latest Bill Maher and Michael Moore, the liberal documentarians on there, and this dude is like kind of like just on the fringes of like kind of snapping. And I think part of that is like people, a lot of people on that political persuasion, it was so traumatic to have Trump elected that I think they kind of told themselves that, oh, you know, we'll get him impeached, we'll do this, and it's this kind of daily onslaught of like, it's this battle, and it's you know, it's the ban, and then it's you know, each kind of issue they have to fight over, whether it's, oh, that's the healthcare thing, and it's and they kind of thought like, man, we're, you know, this guy's crazy. He's gonna say crazy things, and he'll be gone. And they're kind of starting to realize, oh, he probably won't be gone. And not only is he not gone, but he's kind of winning, because the kind of philosophy around a lot of the support behind him is the idea that they're happy that you're sad, right? The going to bathe in liberal tears, you know? So they're living in Schadenfreude, and the liberals actually are fucking flipping out. And amidst that, I don't feel as attached and as kind of combustible, you know, to kind of go back to what I was talking about before, about being kind of a passenger and being not as inflamed. And I'll be honest, I like my position, partially because not because I want to be a spectator, or you know, I guess my tendencies are to be non-activist. But what I'm saying is that I don't want my emotions to be the one driving the ship. And then once we crash on the alien planet, then the rational me has to figure out how to get the fuck out. So in that respect, I'm happy. But going back to my central question, what are the things that you should worry about? What are the things that you should be angry about? And, you know, and I was talking to someone on Twitter, and they were like, well, you should be angry by, you know, for example, you look at this, this situation with the families being split at the border. Right. And I guess that's something many people are angry about. Should I be angry? Maybe. I don't know. You know, I mean, it's not like, things at the border have always been great. And it's not like there's, I think, a simple solution to a lot of these problems. But I think there's this idea that that you can get by on kind of empathy and compassion alone. And that's just not going to happen, because if you were to take in empathically all the suffering that's going on right now, you couldn't get through the fucking day. You couldn't. It would be too hard, you know? So the truth is, we do compartmentalize, and we will say, okay, let's say there were some people families that were separated at the border when Obama was president, or that Obama used a drone to kill somebody. And it's this idea of selectively deciding when we want to be upset about a particular thing. It's not like people didn't get deported when Obama was president. And I can give you the whole reasoning why this era is much, much worse. And it is much worse. And I think we should acknowledge that. But I think there is also this kind of Pavlov's response about, once you decide what the narrative is and then say, all right, everything of this ilk, I'm going to kind of disallow my own agency from deciding how I'm going to react to what's happening. I don't know. I think that is troubling. And it's, you know, I don't know if I'm just disciplined, or maybe I'm just in a good place right now mentally. Maybe that's what it is. I don't really know. But I know when I'm the inverse of that, when I'm kind of a little more reactionary, I like this version of myself better, because I think I have a better way of looking at what's going on. So what I would task those listening to this to kind of do for themselves is actually think about the things that piss you off, and then think about how you got there. Like, are you angry about these things because they actually affect you, or is it because you kind of go, you know, you're being fed what you should be angry about, you know? And yeah, I don't know. It's something to think about. And I'm just I guess I would say I'm sad, but I just wish, you know, people would kind of take some time, smell the roses, and realize that there's really not that much shit to get pissed off about. Or maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I should be pissed off at everything. I don't know. You know, I started this one with a lot of answers and maybe came away with more questions. I guess that's what the X-Men is about, you know? Sometimes you think you got to figure it out and you don't know shit. So really just thinking out loud here, guys. I don't know if that was one of my better monologues or worst ones, but you know what? We got fucking through it. You know what else we're about to get through, guys? We're about to get through a motherfucking show sponsor. That's right. We have a band from New England in the United States, that is the New England, not the old England, New England. These guys are called Dead Reflections, and we're going to play a song called Carry the Torch, and it features Joe Isaiah of City of Homes. Check this out.
Yeah.
So that was Carry the Torch from the band Dead Reflections. And that song features Joe Isaiah of City of Homes. Hope you guys enjoyed that. That song will be featured on a forthcoming album, which will be out in fall of 2018. You can check them out on facebook.com/deadreflectionsofficial and deadreflections.bandcamp.com. And they have some shows coming up. They'll be playing July 28th at 13th Floor in Northampton, Massachusetts, October 12th at Cherry Street Station in Wallingford, Connecticut, and also October 13th, they'll be playing a house show, keeping it real, keeping it mad fucking core in Manchester, New Hampshire. So please check them out. Support the bands, the sponsors that support this show. If you are interested in sponsoring the X-Man, please hit me up on social media or drop an email to thexmanpodcast@gmail.com. With that out of the way, let's talk a little bit about our guest, Mr. Zach Myers from Shinedown. I had the fortune of opening up for Shinedown going back about a month ago with Shinedown and Five Finger Death Punch. And, you know, I've known Zach kind of going back to like NAMM years ago, like 2010, 2011. And we had met, but I don't know if he remembered me or not, but it seemed like just through the years, we kind of would just run into each other, and he was always super cool. And, you know, he was just one of the dudes on the tour. Like, you know, we run into each other, hang out, chat up. You know, we have similar interests. You guys are here during the conversation. We talk basketball. We talk, you know, just industry. He's just a cool fucking cat. Shinedown really, I can't talk about how good this band is live. It was really, I'd say, a learning experience for myself. Not really being a part of this kind of bigger arena rock world. And I'll tell you what, Shinedown, these motherfuckers put on an arena rock show. They do not mess around. And he's a fantastic guitar player, fantastic musician, a great performer. And I'm really, really, really glad that he took the time out of his busy day to do a little time on the X-Man. So, you know what? I'm going to stop talking. I'm going to get right into the interview. Here's my conversation with Mr. Zach Myers. Zach, welcome to the X-Man podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me.
It's this tour is short.
Yeah.
It's only like 2 weeks. And we were in a van and we had bus problems and everything.
You guys have been in more vehicles in 2 weeks than anybody I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Now you're into this bus, which is nice.
Well, it is a nice bus.
Too bad. Palatial.
Apparently, I think this is Nothing More's bus.
Okay.
And then now it's going to go to POD.
All right.
So we're the miscreants in between. But because of that, it's been kind of difficult for me to get people on the show, and I hate bothering people. But I was like, last day, you were more than basically when me and you were talking the other day,
we should have just talked about podcasts.
We should have just recorded that.
Yeah, we should have just had our conversation
and then put it out. So I was like, all right. I gotta have this dude on the show. So I did a little bit of research, but you were almost like offering pieces of your autobiography just in conversation, talking about what you were doing before Shinedown. So you joined Shinedown on their third record, right?
No, technically I started touring with Shinedown on the first album.
Oh, you were touring with them? Okay.
Yeah, so 2004, yeah.
How did you know these guys?
I was playing bass for Saliva when I met them, just filling in as a you know, they're Memphis dudes. So
Saliva's Memphis, right?
So grew up with those guys, and I was filling in on bass, and that's when I met them, and that was right when the first record came out, so 2003. Mm-hmm. And then I started being a guitar tech for Three Doors Down, and they were out with Three Doors Down, so we just kind of would talk every day and see each other in passing, and their bass player was having a baby. And they asked if I could fill in on a bass. And I was like, I was just playing bass for Saliva as like a favor. Like, I'm not a bass player.
And they're like, I can play bass, but I prefer.
Yeah, yeah. Like all guitar players can play bass, but doesn't mean necessarily we're good at it.
Well, yeah. I mean,
we can do things on a bass.
I think it's a little different when you're playing bass in a rock band. Because I think in a rock band, you actually have to play bass.
Yeah, yeah,
you
absolutely.
In a metal band, you can just basically play the riff.
The low string, and you play the riff and be fine.
Like, you know, do we know, has Tom Araya played a bass lick? In all the years,
he holds it down.
But by the way, you know what? Shout out to Tom Araya.
Congrats on your retirement. I hope it's great. Yeah, I mean, for me, like, you know, it was, I was a lead guitar player, so it's like I could do things tastefully and not do too much, you know. So it was, that was kind of the thing. But when I played Bass Was Live, it was, I was doing the metal thing. I was just riffing.
Hold it down.
Yeah. So, and then when I met these guys, asked me to fill in, we didn't do a rehearsal and we didn't do a sound check. I literally went into a show with never playing with these gentlemen before and did a 15 song set, and then
on bass.
Yeah. And then they asked me about 3 weeks later, me and Brent were walking, it was the last show, and he's like, I don't want you to leave. And it was kind of this, like, you know, romantic, like, movie moment, you know, where I was like, you know, I was like, well, I'm not a bass player, and you have a bass player, and you also have a guitar player. And it's like, well, what if you were like came in as like a second guitar player, because you can sing too. And I was like, yeah, sure,
because you were a lead singer for another band
though. Yeah, I was my own band, the Farewell. Zach Myers Band, which is where I got signed when I was 14, you know. So
you're like are you a phenom? Are you a
teenage superstar? I was when I was younger. Now I'm just a dude who can barely play guitar. which is funny, because that's kind of what B.B. King told me when I was young. He was like, the best advice I've probably ever gotten was from B.B. King. He said, this is cute until your 18th birthday.
Really?
And he was telling the truth, you know, because it's like when you're a kid, it's niche, you know, like it's a cool thing that you're
ahead of the curve,
and it's cute because you're a kid. When you're 18, you're just another adult. Now you better be really good at your craft.
Do you know Brooks Wackerman?
Yeah.
You know, so if you guys listen, Brooks Wackerman is the drummer for Avenged Sevenfold.
Now. Bad Religion.
So I played with him with Rob Trujillo in this band, yeah. Mass Mental. And I wasn't really, I'd heard his name, and at the time he was in Bad Religion and Tenacious D, but I didn't know he was in this teenage rock metal band that got signed and produced by Steve Vai when he was 13 years old or something. I had
like
no
progressive
idea.
Progressive, like, yeah, yeah.
It was that kid from that was on Nickelodeon. He was in Terminator 2 well. I mean, I'm wearing a Terminator shirt, but the kid with the red hair, he was the lead singer in this band. Anyway, enough about him, but, you know, going back to your thing, you were a phenom and then you grew up.
Yeah, so I just grew up and started playing. So for me, like, I was a singer, and I think he wanted me to be in the band, even as a hired gun. So when I came in, I was just a hired guy. Like, I wasn't a band member, you know? And so I started doing that, and then it turned into what it is now. And 13 years later, I've been here.
Yeah.
13, 14.
Well, so I don't often do research for this show. It depends.
That's the best way to do it.
Well, but I did do a little cram session at four in the morning, going through the catalog. And even touring with you guys, you're one of those bands where even if you don't think you're familiar with the band,
yeah,
you've heard the songs.
We call ourselves a faceless radio band. That's what we call ourselves.
Is that good or is that good or bad? Is it better to be that you can go to Walmart and not have people like up your ass? Or are people up your ass at Walmart?
It's in my hometown, sure. But like I tell people all the time, like, so if me and you are walking around, okay, we're in, where are we? Grand Forks, North Dakota right now. If you, me and you are walking around in a mall yesterday and people know there's a show here tomorrow, they're gonna put two and two together and think we're in a band.
Yeah.
But if I come to Grand Forks next week, no one's gonna, I could walk into a Shinedown store wearing a Shinedown shirt and no one's gonna know who I am.
But you don't look crazy though. Like some people, like for example, Tommy in our
band. Tommy's got tattoos on his head.
Well, not that. He looks like, you know, he came from, like he's in Guardians of the Galaxy or something. Yeah. You know, he doesn't look like a normal person. We
call it show ready. He's always show ready. For me, like, I enjoy looking like a dad.
Yeah.
You know, because I am a dad. You know, so for me, like, I used to always be show ready, dude. Bracelets, eyeliner, you know what I mean? Like the
scarves,
whole, dude.
Scarves
wrapped around my wrist, okay. Dude. Bandit chain wallet.
Chain wallet.
We call it show ready, dude. I was always show ready. So like when Sound of Madness days, I was like, a show could break out in this parking lot of this FYE and I'd be ready to go.
Yeah. Did you have a six strings, you know, you're a traveling troubadour ready to go?
I just in a case, you know? So for me, like, but I enjoy being in a famous band and not being famous.
Yeah.
Like it's actually, as a dad and a person who spends a lot of time with my kid and goes out a lot, you know, I don't want people taking pictures. And listen, I'm not one of those guys that's like, oh, I don't want to be famous in this dark mood. I think being famous is great. I prefer my life. You know, I really enjoy my life.
Well, the best, I think what you're talking about in a sense is having the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
Right. So
I can go to work and have stardom and I can step off stage and have anonymity, you know what I mean? And that's, to me, that's the best, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, I just had Roy Mayorga
from
Stone Sour on the show, and I was just getting, this whole world is new for me.
Yeah.
You know, so I remember the first time I heard Shinedown, I was with my old band, God Forbid. We were playing Lunatic Luau.
Yeah.
2004, it was an Ozfest off day.
Slipknot was on that headline that day.
So it was basically all the Ozfest bands. And you guys, were you playing this time?
Is this 2004? I was there, yeah.
Okay, so I'm literally walking. So we're playing like the side stage, which is on this hill. Mm-hmm. It's actually one of the best shows probably we ever played. It was insane.
Oh, wow.
And I'm walking through the amphitheater, and I was literally stopped. I think I might have just been walking through, and I heard you guys do Simple Man. And his voice, I was stunned. Like, I couldn't believe it. And at that point, it was a stark realization that a band like Shinedown was in a different world or a different, like, we were doing different things. Like, we didn't, and when you're that screamy, metal, heavy mosh pit world, it's just a different universe. Yeah. So for us to do something like Lunatic Luau, which I think is more of a radio...
It's a radio show.
It's a radio show, right? So we were kind of the outside looking in. Now, I'm in a pretty heavy band, but we have the number one active rock song in the country. We're on shows like this and actually doing well and having some interplay. So I'm completely... I'm just taking it all in, I guess.
It's a new world,
Yeah, and so... No, but going back, like I said, doing my little amount of research, going back and listening to the catalog, seemed like the earlier records... Was I guess? Did you ever watch that documentary, Metal Headbangers Journey?
Yeah.
So it had that one thing on. What was it, post grunge? Is that what they called it?
Yeah. Well, to me, everything is post. I call every music post folk as a joke, because like to me, the post thing is just stupid.
Well, I think that. Did you ever watch that? Yeah. So they did the Metal Evolutions TV series. Yep. They did the one. Post-grunge, episode,
yeah.
And I thought that episode, well, actually, no, they did a grunge episode and they included a piece of it, kind of. Did they talk to you guys for that?
I don't know. I think they may have talked to Brent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And listen, I think in a way, there's all subgenres get weird, right?
Yeah.
Because almost no one wants to be associated with the thing, because usually once it's passé, it becomes a dirty word or it gets in that particular genre, right? So you had Hootie, Days of the New, Nickelback was like, I think probably
Tantric.
Exactly. So you had a lot of bands that didn't really kind of make the cut. But I think when you listen to that, the first record I went back to, and it's not that, but it's enough of that that you kind of get where it's coming from. But then I went through each record. And you see each record gets a little bit heavier.
Yeah.
Gets a little bit groovier.
Yeah.
The riffs get a little bit stompier.
Yeah.
You know, what was the kind of key behind the evolution in that? Is just personal preference or the changing of the scene or the band you were playing with?
I think it was a combination of two things. I think it was a natural evolution of, you know, how you play. You've going from a metal to, you're still in a metal band, but you have some radio mystique now. You're getting this thing. You'll kind of change a little bit of what you do.
Are you saying you feel like Shinedown's a metal band?
No, I'm saying like you understand how it feels to go from being in a metal band to being like a radio slash metal band.
Yeah,
you know, so it's like you, as a player, you kind of become a chameleon to your background.
Yeah.
And for us, I think the first record came out in 2002. So 2002 is Korn, Edema, you know, I don't know if I think Seether might have been out. You know, all these bands that were kind of
everything
in the same genre esque of what we were doing.
It's fine. We can edit it, so it's fine. Yeah. We got Tommy Vex making an appearance on the podcast.
Sorry, guys.
We're just talking about your tattoos on your head.
That's right. We're talking about how you can't go anywhere that you're a celebrity.
Yeah.
Celebrity Tommy Vex.
You can always be seen. So I can put sleeves on and look like a dad, you know.
See.
I got that dad bod going on.
Tell about that horse
car. Yeah, well, you know, listen, it's already been on the internet.
I heard
so, Lord. It's already been on the internet, man. It's all out there. You know, so for me, like, with the band, like, when that came out, that was the scene. You know, that kind of dark, I don't want to say new metal because I hate that word, but it was that kind of post.
It had a little bit of
a
that.
A little bit, yeah, sure. And then the second album, because we're from the South, the second album was very Southern rock.
Yeah.
Like, but the second album was made in 6 weeks. Yeah. And then with the third record, new bass player, old guitar player gone. Now it's just me and Eric, you know, and Brent and Barry, you know. So it's for that.
Was that the first one you wrote, you started writing?
No. It was for us, like that was like, Eric wasn't even in the band when we did the record. So for us, like we also got a huge producer, Rob Cavallo, who had done, he just did American Idiot. Wow. You know what I mean? So like he did American Idiot, he did Black Parade. Jesus. He had like done these, he did Dookie, you know, he did Dizzy Up the Girl by Goo Goo Dolls. He had done these huge records. So now it's like, and not saying like Bob Marlette did the first record, so that's a real producer too. And Tony Battaglia, who did the second record, is a great producer. But like this was like a different level, you know? And for that record, you knew from the start it was something special, you know? And usually that's not the way you should. Most of the time, your first record is your big record. Most of the time, not all the time.
If you're lucky.
If you're lucky. But you know, for us, our first record did well, but we were still playing.
Well, went platinum.
Went double platinum.
So you're.
But that took a, that didn't, it didn't go double platinum. Yeah. Like it wasn't, it didn't come out and sell a million records a week, you know?
Well, back then though, I remember records would germinate and take a while to hit. So a couple examples are the first Kid Rock record.
Yeah.
That took like 3 years to actually break.
I mean, he was touring on that record for 2 years.
Yeah. The first System of a Down record took a good year and a half to break. But that was also a time when, in a sense, when the internet was not that, this mover of thing where things could not technically go quote unquote viral.
Yeah, yeah.
Even now I looked with the success of Zombie, it hit on the internet first.
Yeah.
Right. So all the places, YouTube, iTunes sales, it was terrestrial radio that took 3 months to catch up. So if you're looking back,
that's the
then,
best way to do it though. Now yeah, it is. Yeah. I think, you know, we got to think we built our band on the radio. So we built our band in a car traveling to every radio station. So for now, like the best promotion you can have for your record is celebrities posting your record.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that's like you see like, dude, this Post Malone record the first week because everybody was posting about it.
All the other celebrities.
It broke like the Spotify streaming record in the first week. And so that's kind of the best, you know, you guys going viral first is actually a good thing.
Well, it put the narrative we heard from Jackie at the management was saying, basically radio was saying, we're done with covers. Guys, you've given us, we're sick of covers, we're sick of it. And because all these other metrics outside of radio were, it was hitting number one, they basically didn't have a choice.
So well, you want to be undeniable.
Yeah.
Your goal always is to be undeniable. And I think with covers, you know, I think with the radio, they just kind of gotten like, same thing with the movie generation now. Like everyone's just remaking movies. There's no original idea. So, you know, I think the radio was getting kind of tired of covers. But, you know, you guys had a song that was, it was weird. It's one of those songs that maybe everybody didn't play in their car every day, like the Cranberries version. But everyone knows that song.
Of course.
Every person knows that song because it was so big. In our generation, the kind of, what are we? We're not Generation X, but we're like in between. We're in between the millennials.
I'm 37.
Yeah, so I'll be 30. I'm 35, so I'm not a millennial. So I'm like, they called it something. I forgot the other day.
I was literally just, who was I talking about this with the other day? Where we're that perfect age where we existed long enough in the pre-internet age to understand kind of the analog.
You're talking to me
world.
About it.
Okay, we're literally reliving this conversation, and then we've lived long enough to be in the internet world,
half and half in each thing,
but where we can adapt. Right, so like I talked to my father. My father's, he doesn't get it. He, I have to kind of walk through him some stuff. Sorry, Dad, I love you. But some people just, it's too difficult to kind of really wrap their head around it. So in a way, I think it's kind of good to be in this middle ground.
Yeah, you know, for me, like with the internet thing, it came along and I was kind of late to it.
Yeah.
You know, and especially on social media, like Shinedown was real late getting a start on that. But with this day and age, like I said, with the song Zombie, people know the song, and then you had the misfortune of Dolores dying, and it's like it sucks, and it's such a horrible thing, but like, what a great thing that it happened that you guys recorded that song and she was supposed to be on it. And it's like, it's a weird romantic serendipitous tragedy. You know what I mean? Like it's awful that
it's definitive of bittersweet.
It is. Yeah. I mean, yeah. You look up bittersweet in the dictionary and that's it, but you know what? It's cool that it became a tribute. instead of a guest feature, which is amazing. And, you know, and I think that had a ton to do with the song going to where it was, you know, was people hadn't heard it in a long time. And then she passed and she was supposed to sing on the song. And like, that's going to interest people because she was, you know, she obviously gave it her endorsement.
Yeah.
You know, she was coming to sing on the song.
Well, it was the last message she left before she died was her talking about how much she loved the song.
Yeah.
And so it became this, and that's, I think the element what worked for us is it literally becomes a story in a genre where there's not a lot of stories, right? So I think that's
a perfect way to put it.
And that if you look at the way popular music has gone, it's become dominated by individuals, solo artists, rappers.
No guitar.
Well, no guitar. But the thing is, a rapper can have a story. A country artist can have a story. And they're more in the business of telling stories, right? So those formats are more kind of conditioned to that. But going back to what I was saying about you joining the band, and even though it took some time, in a sense, Shinedown's kind of always been, you know, A+ at the leader of the pack of this industry. Is that something that, or am I reading it wrong? I mean,
in a way with radio, sure, but like in the live setting, no. Like,
you guys really have to build.
I mean, our band is, I'm doing a slow moving upward motion with my hand right now. Our band has always been this. It's never been shoot to the top.
Yeah.
Like, our band's, you know, we're a 4-wheel drive band. We're constantly climbing the mountain. And, you know, up until the third record, which was, like I said, it's very rare that a third record is the record that breaks you, you know? So when we released the third record, that's when we got into arenas because we had a number one pop song in Second Chance, which is, I remember having a number one pop song was so cool because the day it went number one, Casey Kasem was retiring. So the last song Casey Kasem signed off the air with was Second Chance.
Yeah.
So for like that voice, that iconic voice from when I was a kid listening to the American Top 40. And then, you know, you see, and then girls start to come to your shows. We're just a rock band, you know? So it's like, we didn't have like a good looking girls. I mean, you know, like we did, but it was like, you know, there'd be 100 in a show of 1,000, 1,500 people. And then we start playing arenas and then it's thousands. You know what I mean? So you see the crowd shift because.
But that's what I'm saying. So you guys, all right. So this disconnect between being a quote unquote radio band and this idea of the hardcore fan and being able to fill a giant venue. Because there's some bands you look at like a Pop Evil or a Hailstorm who gets played on the radio. And these bands do well.
And get number ones too. Yeah.
But they're not headlining arenas yet. Yeah. So clearly there is a distinction. And is it that, hey, we need to get a pop hit or we need to what? And I say this as someone who, I hadn't seen the band since that 2004 show. Yeah. And then a few weeks ago when we played, I think, Fort Rock together. And you guys bring an energy and a physical performance to the show that I don't see in that many quote-unquote radio bands. I think Hailstorm has it.
Yeah.
They really bring an energy.
But they're a 4-wheel drive band too.
Yeah.
They're kind of like climbing that mountain slowly.
That's true.
They're starting to play bigger venues.
That's
true. I get what you're saying. And I think what you just said is the reason we're in arenas is because we kind of have this no mercy, and not in like, you know, Five Finger has it too, and more in like a metal way.
Yeah.
But we kind of have this take no prisoners attitude when it comes to the live show. You're going to get into the show and you're going to have fun. I don't care if you like our band or not. I'm playing to the person in the last row just as much as I'm playing to the person in the first row.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's kind of, I think, where we built our brand. You know, I think we built it, you know, Brent's one of the best singers in rock and roll,
dude.
You know, and he, honestly, one of the best front men too. Like he makes everyone feel like he's only playing for them, but he makes everybody feel like they're in the same family.
Yeah, it's honestly, that dude is on some next level shit.
Dude, here's the thing, man, is the craziest, he means every word of it, man. Like none of that shit is put on. Like he is the most genuine person when it comes to fans. Like this is all he wants. he wants Shinedown and Shinedown's fans and people who aren't Shinedown fans to be Shinedown fans, to be a family. And so when he says stuff on stage, like that shit is real, man. Like he means every word of that. I think you can feel it too.
I think he should be president. The way that dude talks to the crowd, he's like,
he never wants to do that.
And all the dogs.
Yeah.
And all the clouds.
Yeah.
And the rainbows. We will get together and we will march. And I'm like, let freedom ring.
Yeah, no. He's like, he makes you believe it, man. You know, and that's the beautiful part about him as a front man. It's like he says something, and you're like, yeah, like even on nights where he's like, he'll get off on it some nights, and he'll like the path will kind of make a left. And I'm like, we always joke that we have a wrap it up button, like on the Chappelle show. We're like, all right, wrap it up, B.
When you guys are doing those little in between
jams and stuff,
are those on like a clicker in there, or is it all just free flow?
We're just going.
Okay.
Yeah, they can turn into a mess too, but no, it's the rest of the show is on a click.
We don't
like, there's some bands that like the whole show, once the show starts, it doesn't stop. The click just keeps running, even with segues. We don't do that. All the jam stuff is just us playing as a three piece.
Yeah.
And then him doing his thing, but the rest of the songs are going to click because we run string tracks and like weird key stuff and stuff that obviously we can't have people do live. So when we get to jam, it can go off the rails just because we're having so much fun.
Yeah. So being in the realm you're in this world, you guys are making a record. This is the same question I asked Roy, because like I said, I'm kind of new to this world. Is there a pressure to saying we have to write hits? It's not just we can't write a song we like. We have to write hits. And is there someone, you guys have been on Atlantic, right? Basically
the whole time.
The whole time, which is
still to this day.
Almost never happens in
six records.
Any label or
and they just gave us two more.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Is that something that hangs over the band's head when you're writing?
No. Here's why though. When I say this, this isn't me just trying to massage the shoulders of what I think is the greatest label ever. They're the greatest label ever. You know, we have never had pressure from our label.
Have you had the same A&R person?
One
A&R
guy.
That literally, every time I've heard about a band signed to a major,
somebody leaves and then
like immediately on the first record,
the guy gets fired or whatever.
The whole team, I hear
the whole team, yeah. And we've had the same team. I mean, like a couple people have come and gone, like, you know, like our head of sales or like our content people and maybe the art director and then the head of Chris Brown is our guy now, but he's that position's changed only once. And then our A&R guy's been the same, our president's been the same, our CEO's been the same. Like, you know, and we're with Atlantic, like we talked to Craig Kalman, we talked to Julie Greenwald. Julie Greenwald was with Jay-Z, you know, which we just had, gave us a bunch of awards recently. And Julie said the only other artist she's made six albums with is Jay-Z. And I was like, that meant so much to me, you know. But for us, like with the label, they've never given us a clock, never put a clock in the room when we're making a record and being like, hey, we got to have this. Yeah. We got to meet our quarter. We need you to sell records, you know. And with the hits thing, we want to write hits. It's never like they're like,
you like, that's the types of songs you like.
Yeah, because we grew up on the radio, you know. And you know, listen, Eric and I, who are the main musical writers in the band, you know, dude, one of our favorite bands is Glassjaw, for both of us. But we know we can't do that, but we can still put those influences in a song.
Listen, Glassjaw has some hits. It's just no one heard the hits.
No one heard them, yeah. Like, you know,
Ape Dose Mill is a hit. I'm sorry.
Oh, dude, every song on that record to me, Mew Empire could have been a hit. You know what I mean?
Dude,
like, it's, you know, that's what I'm saying. Me and Eric are heavily, one of Eric's favorite
bring
bands
them on
is Machine
tour.
Head. Oh, dude.
Would they do it?
No, they wouldn't do it. That's the thing is, like, I love Daryl and I love those guys, but I think if I was like, hey, we want to bring you on tour, I think Daryl would probably be a little elitist about it.
Well,
I don't think he would do it. But Daryl, I'm asking you right now if you would tour with us.
Well, I'm going to get him on the show.
All right,
and
good.
I'm going to put the screws in. I'm like, yo, man, do you not like playing in front of 10,000 people?
Come I don't on. Know if he does.
Yeah. Well, it's actually, yeah, for some people that
I think
don't
it's
like it.
I don't think it's elitist with him. I think it's like a real thing. I think he likes the more intimate.
Well, they opened up for Coheed, and that
they
was,
did.
You know, Coheed's
another
doing
band.
Like, they're doing like 3,000, 4,000
another band
people
we're
night.
Trying to bring out.
Yeah.
I'm friends with those guys, and I have a Coheed tattoo,
no
actually,
shit.
On my shoulder. Yeah, I got it from my son. But you know, back to the hit thing. Like, we're inspired by a hit song. You know, like I love big choruses. I love big guitar riffs. I love guitar solos. But we try to find a way to make it our own. My favorite thing about Shinedown and the biggest compliment I've ever gotten is no one can ever say we sound like another band.
Yeah.
And that's like the like to me, there's no better compliment than being like, I've never heard Shinedown somebody, oh, they kind of sound like blank.
Well, no, it's the opposite. Usually people are like, oh, that band sounds like Shinedown.
Yeah, yeah.
That's usually what you hear.
But that's amazing. You know, and I don't take that. I don't think other people, I hope they don't take offense to that. That would suck. But for us, like, to be an influence to anybody, but like, I've never been like, oh, Shinedown sounds like STP, or they sound like the Foo Fighters, they sound like Soundgarden. You know what I mean? Like, I've never heard that, which is, to me, like, that's the best compliment you have, saying somebody, you don't sound like somebody.
So I've been hearing Devil before the record came out. And by the way, congratulations on your guys' first week.
Thank you very much.
Top five. Is that the
number
biggest?
Number four.
Biggest?
No, we had a number three with Amaryllis.
Either way.
We couldn't get past Post Malone, dude. His second week was still did like 170,000 records.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. But congratulations anyway.
You as well. You don't know your numbers yet, but you will know tomorrow.
We will find out. But Devil, I think it's the best song the band's ever written.
Thank you.
It's my favorite.
Thank you.
I don't want to say it's the best song. It's my favorite song.
I'll take that.
And I know you guys definitely believe in it because you fucking close with it, which is basically no one ever does that. Close with a brand new song. And then going through the record, Attention, the fucking production's insane on that record.
It's all our bass player.
Dude, sounds ridiculous. I notice it's getting... There's a little more kind of electronic stuff in there.
Started on the last record.
It did start on the last record. But that song in particular, Devil, there's like a heavy, deep, like this halftime groove to it that's really slams. And it kind of feels, I don't know, it just feels modern.
Yeah.
In a sense. Is that purposeful or is that like almost like I hear a little Muse stuff in there.
Oh, yeah.
I hear a little bit, I guess because you're... There's this kind of changing in the guard in what is considered to be rock, right? So you got your Imagine Dragons and your 21 Pilots. Do you feel like pressure to keep up with the Joneses in that realm? Like you said before about, hey, there's not, guitars are almost like not welcome in these other realms and stuff.
I think on Threat to Survival, which is the last record, we started experimenting with the electronic stuff. And because it was fun. And honestly, probably the most natural record we've ever made. Yeah. None of us were ever really in the same room at the same time because we had five different producers. So it was like, which I loved because it was like, every guy's different, you know? You know, you've made records, you know? So it's like when you're making records, like every guy has a different thing. But like I would be doing guitar on two songs one day and then Barry would be setting up to do drums with the next producer for these next three songs. And then Eric would be cutting bass for like a guy who was doing five songs, you know? And so we started experimenting on that. And I think people got a little weirded out by it because
I like it. I think
Threat's a great record for what it is. I think in the arc of our career, people will think it's weird.
Yeah.
But for me, like I love it. And I wanted to get away from big guitars on that record. And it wasn't because of like this Imagine Dragons thing started happening. I just kind of really like that Jack White approach to guitars. And I was getting into that, this one note, small amp with a fuzz pedal and making one amp and like this tiny little speaker sound huge.
Yeah. Almost like a minimalism.
Yeah. Yeah. Less is more. And it's funny because, you know, you guys are starting a band in the age of the internet where there's a portion of the internet that has the shittiest opinions ever, you know? And it's like, what'll happen is when we did that, people were going, there's too much production on this record. And they don't know what the fuck the word production means, by the way, because Threat to Survival had the least, literally, you want to talk about, that was basically a demo record. Like,
wow.
It was literally the least amount of production, but people hear a synth and go, that's production.
Yeah.
You know, but on Attention, I think we kind of took the best of the both worlds. We took the riffs and the heavy guitars of Sound of Madness and put them on this. And there's a ton of guitar solos on this record too. And then we mix them with those influences, you know, like a song like Black Soul, which has this do 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 intro. But then when the chorus kicks in, it's like the heaviest guitar ever, you know?
Well, when I was listening to it last night, I was like, all right, I need to start digging into this record.
You're like the James Lipton of podcasting. You're like, you're digging deep on everything.
Well, like I said, it's for certain things I have to do a little bit of research just to know what I'm talking about and be able to reference certain things. And it's also a great way to kind of just have a sense of the history, especially someone like you who's been doing it for so long. So I don't have that much more time because I actually have to play.
You gotta
a little
go
bit
on stage.
I
do,
yes, but here's the thing:
you gotta go rock to 10,000 people tonight.
This is a priority. We gotta talk a little hoops before you go.
Oh yeah,
like me, you are an NBA junkie.
I am.
You were telling me, you know, you see, guys, you don't know what happens backstage. I get to talk to Zach. He's like, yo, man, you know, I'm talking to my friends from the Memphis Grizzlies. I'm hanging with this dude, and I'm sitting there, and I'm jealous of his life, and I'm like, I want to hang out with Marc Gasol and, you know, Mike Conley and all these people. So, how are you feeling right now about what's going on with the Grizzlies organization?
I'm a little sad that we got the fourth pick, and we had a 25% chance to get the first pick.
Who is it? The Kings moved up and the Suns moved up?
Suns got the first pick. I think the Kings got the second.
I don't think. Here's
Atlanta
the thing.
Got the second.
So here's the thing. Fuck of the Kings because they've been fucking up. They've been getting top five picks for like 10.
Forever.
For like 16 years. Doesn't matter.
For 60 years, I feel like.
The Suns, I think, are a good organization who's had
a little.
I don't like
Devin Booker.
Dude, yo, listen, man. He can put the rock in the hole, man.
I don't like his attitude. I mean, you know, listen, he's a kid. So I can't say that. He's a great player, though. It's weird,
they've
man.
Kind of blown it with a
there's
couple picks,
dudes,
too.
There's dudes. Yeah, they have, too. So, but the Grizzlies are the worst. We have literally, dude, I promise you this. Look up worst draft history. Oh, I think, so the year we took Hasheem the Beat. Hold on. You know what? We'll keep talking, but I'm gonna look this up.
That one is rough. That one's rough.
I'm going to look this up. We'll keep talking about it. So for me, like, I think that we're going to be great next year. I think we
what do you mean you're going to be great next year?
I think we're
going to
be great.
Mean?
I think we pulled out of.
Do you know how many good teams are in the West Conference? You could win. You could be, you know, 500 and still finish 11th.
Yeah, but you know what? I don't know. I think we're a good team. We've always made it to the playoffs the last 8 years. So here's what I'm saying. All right. So here's the picks, right? So this is we had the second pick.
No, I know this draft. This is brutal.
2009.
This is the story of Whitney Houston.
This is the story of Kurt Cobain.
Of George Michael, of Otis Redding, of Amy Winehouse, of Michael Hutchence, Bob Marley. This is the story of Prince.
It's a new podcast series.
About how they died, why they died, and while we're still talking about them so long after.
It's like nothing you've ever heard before.
It's storytelling.
But it's more than that, because rock stars,
they tell us how we feel. They change our mood.
They change the clothes we wear, the people we hang out with,
the way we remember things.
It's them who give us those ludicrous moments, the ones where you're
jumping around, singing your heart out, feeling understood.
And it's those moments we'll help you remember, the ones you're thinking about right now.
That feeling.
That feeling.
It's coming soon from Crowd Network.
Just search for Death of a Rockstar on your podcast app.
And subscribe now.
Welcome to us talking about our podcast for a minute.
What's the name of that podcast?
That's Axe to Grind, and right now you're going to be getting a little taste of it, right down to the shaky microphone and all.
And my name's Bob.
And my name's Patrick, and usually we're joined by Tom.
Tom's the best. Tom has a real grown-up job that requires him to be at work, but we talk about decidedly not-so-grown-up things like
hardcore music and things that people that like hardcore music tend to like.
So that could be the latest shows, revisiting classic material, talking about the new classics, all the little dorm room nonsense that you imagine from a niche music podcast that you either love, want to love, or hate.
Yeah, imagine all the emotions that you have towards a genre that has impacted your life, and then condense them down to an hour to 2 hours a week.
So triangulate your speakers. Think about jumping off the bed, singing along, dancing like an idiot, and listen to Axe to Grind podcast.
Hey, this is Steve Choi, host of the Musicians Guild podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media podcast network. Within the four walls of the Musicians Guild, we'll be discussing the habits, idiosyncrasies, experiences, and general psychology of my friends and peers all involved with music in various capacities. Listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com.
Great draft.
We chose Hashim the Beat.
Tall man.
Yeah, who works at like Walmart or Menards now. I don't know where it is. Over James Harden.
Yeah.
Tyreek Evans.
Yeah.
Ricky Rubio.
Okay.
A Stephen Curry. I don't know if you've ever heard of him, but he's going to be great one day.
At least you didn't take Johnny Flynn.
Yeah, that's true. That's also true. DeMar DeRozan, Brandon Jennings, okay. Austin Day, who I still would have taken, James Johnson, who ended up playing for us, Ty Law, Drew Holiday, Jeff Teague, Darren Collison. Literally everyone behind Hashim the Beat would have been a better
draft. Who was the other? So Minnesota took Johnny Flynn and then one other scrub point guard, right?
Yeah.
They took someone else. Yeah,
Johnny Flynn was a really
good guy. I get it. It's hard. Listen, I'm a Knicks fan. We've whiffed on a lot of people too.
Well, you have a great coach now.
Thank the Lord.
Shout out to David Fizdale.
David Fizdale. So me and you, we were having a LeBron conversation about what the
theory
is.
You're gonna make me give my where I think LeBron's gonna be.
Yeah, let's hear it. Let's hear the.
I think LeBron James.
Oh, glad you specified.
Not LeBron Edwards, LeBron James.
LeBron Edwards.
I think LeBron James will be in Philadelphia next year or in Los Angeles. I'm not going to say Lakers or Clippers.
Can I come at you real quick, though?
Yeah,
but those are the ones people are talking about the most. That's not really a bold statement.
It's not, but because I think it's true. I wish I could say I think LeBron's going to go to the Pacers. You know what I mean? Like, I wish I could say,
where would you like him to go if you could choose?
Because I like Philadelphia as a team, I'd like them to go to Philadelphia.
Okay, but how does – here's why I think Philadelphia, even though I don't think it's a terrible place to go, I think right now with the way LeBron sucks up all the oxygen in the room, rightfully so, that his skill set and Ben Simmons' skill set are redundant. And I think he would actually stifle his development.
I agree with that, and I love Ben Simmons and I love Joel Embiid. But
could you?
I think Brett Brown as a coach can handle LeBron.
Really?
I do. I think
Brett Brown as a coach just got his lunch fed to him by fucking Brad Stevens.
That's true. Well,
they lost three games.
Brad Stevens is the best young coach out there.
I know, but come on,
I saw something the other day. Like, is Brad Stevens getting too much credit? No, fuck no.
He needs more.
He's a great coach, dude. His two best players are out. One of them got injured game one.
Hold on. Actually, can we come out the gate and say a few things?
Yeah.
One, about this, because I think that there's a little – there's a way to analyze the success with Boston that we have to kind of think about differently from my perspective.
Yeah.
One, essentially Terry Rozier is giving you about 85% of Kyrie Irving's production.
Yeah.
But guess what? That dude is like all-world defense. He is a great defensive player.
He reminds me of Tony Allen.
Okay, so so let's talk about that. So you lose Kyrie, but then you don't really lose much on the offensive end and get a lot more defensive end. So that's kind of a bonus. Now let's hold on. I ain't done yet. I think you could argue that Tatum and Jaylen Brown are as good as Gordon Hayward.
Yeah, but it takes two of them.
What do you mean it takes two?
You mean just Jaylen Brown is as good as Gordon Hayward?
I think both those guys are all
individually.
They are all star level talents. And it's not that.
The East.
Well, I'm just saying in general. Like
overall,
look at their potential, the way they are playing.
You think Tatum's an all star player overall?
I think they are playing like all stars. This dude, he scores 20 points a game seven times in a row. He's basically having the best rookie campaign in the playoffs, what, since Magic Johnson or some shit?
Everybody needs a shot, though. You know, I've always said that, man. I got so mad at the Grizzlies. We would get all these young players and never play them. And it's like, these guys have to have a chance to develop.
Yeah, I agree.
When they develop, they have the best seasons of their life. Dude, Tyreek Evans came back to the Grizzlies this year and had the best season of his career.
But you gotta keep in mind with Tyreek, pretty much it seemed like everything with him was internal. Like, he had some drinking issues. He had some
injury.
Abuse. But it seemed like he was going through some personal things.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, listen, basketball is basketball. You know, no one thought a word about Jeremy Lin until he was the most talked about person in the NBA a couple seasons ago.
But I was – honestly, here's the thing about Jeremy Lin. I think the biggest thing he had going against him, racism.
Yeah.
I think people looked at an Asian guy and kind of –
not a big Asian guy.
But for a point guard, 6'3", 6'4", he has great size for a point guard.
But he's not this dominant Yao Ming guy. So I don't know. Is there a difference between racism and racial stereotype though?
I think they are. So
is one like a lighter punch in the face? I'm asking.
So I actually started writing a book about racism, and I created I'm not done with it.
And we
I'm
talked barely, about Martin Luther King the other night. Obviously, Martin Luther King is probably one of my heroes, but maybe my all time hero. So I'm incredibly against racism.
But I wrote a chapter. It's called Redefining Racism.
All right.
And stereotyping is essentially, instead of saying the problem is people look at racism and think that A, things are racist, or B, they are not racist, but there's actually a spectrum, all right? So stereotyping is a form of racism, but is it, I hate you and want to burn your family down? No, not exactly. But I think there is racism. It's the same thing like white men can't jump, right?
Yeah, or so dance.
So what they do is, they'll find the ringer, let's find the goofy white dude, and our stereotyping or racism that assumes someone is bad at something, allows people to not, that little, the eye test, disallows us from looking at their ability and just saying, hey, if we, it disallowed coaches and people of giving Jeremy Lin a chance.
Yeah, I think so too. But I definitely think there's a place where funny stereotypes are in place for a reason. You know what I mean? So like, I think they're, and what I mean by that is to be broken. You know what I mean? So like, you got Jeremy Lin, who's like, oh yeah, this Asian guy, like he's just on the team because he was a great player for what he did, and he's a great backup. And then the kid comes in and like literally takes over the NBA. I don't remember a headline for 6 weeks that wasn't about Jeremy Lin.
Yeah.
You know, it goes back to what I was saying though. I think these kids need a chance to play. You talk about Tatum and you talk about Rozier.
What about Fultz? Do you think Fultz should have played in that series? He was healthy.
Maybe. I don't know.
Or was the pressure of the moment maybe a little too much for someone who barely played in the regular season?
I don't think the outcome would have changed, and I don't think that it would have been, you know what I mean? Like I think the pressure might have been a little much.
Yeah.
But like, you never know until you play those. You got to play those people in those moments. And I'll be honest, man. I think your litmus test can only be one game. People are like, oh, give him another chance. But like, you put somebody in a high pressure moment like that, and you let them play ball, they're gonna do their best. And granted, if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out, because people are gonna play defensive sets. People are gonna play different every night. You know, Cleveland creamed the Celtics last night, but the two games before that, the Celtics just trampled the Cavs.
Well, truth be told, the Cavs were up like 11 points, and then LeBron James basically got his head taken off, and it wasn't the same. I think if LeBron never would have got hit in the neck, they might not ever have lost that lead. But I could be wrong.
I don't know. I mean, I watching that injury. You talking about where he shoulder checked when he got shoulder checked?
The dude
in the
had
face.
32 points in the first half.
Yeah. Oh no, that game was starting to get ridiculous. But you knew he was going to do that. Anytime he comes out and has a bad game like that, and he says he's going to come out and do something that game, he does it. You know, that's kind of like, you know, that's the guy that can put a team on his back and literally carry the team. But he's also the guy who can get a whole team traded away, you know. So it's an interesting dichotomy to see. I think that a determined LeBron James will jump over any wall except for the Warriors. You know, like, he's got to have the help of everybody else to beat the Warriors.
So real quick, before we go, so we have four teams left, the final four. Yeah. Does anyone have a chance to beat the Warriors?
I said yesterday I don't think Boston has a chance at all, but I could be very wrong.
Does Houston have a chance? Houston has a great—
I think Houston may have the only chance to beat the Warriors. But then again, listen, I have two sports rules in my life, and they've been the same for probably the last 15 years. I'll never in my life bet against Tom Brady in the history of
pretty
betting.
Pretty good
rule. And I'll
unless
never,
it's the Giants, yo.
I'll never,
Jersey!
I'll never in my life bet against LeBron James.
Okay.
Ever. Even if he loses. Like, those are just the dudes you don't bet against because they're the supermen of their craft.
Let's say Golden State wins this year, maybe wins next year or the year after. Will that experiment or that really fluke of what happened of Kevin Durant going there when he did, has this been good for the league or bad for the league?
Bad for the league.
Okay.
It's good for the team.
Well, it's actually good for the NBA because the
people pay attention.
Well, people like the people who are the Fairweather fans who are not necessarily paying attention to it like dynasties.
I'll be honest though, but I think the regular NBA fan stops watching.
No, we don't. I'll just keep watching, even though I know it's gonna. I'll be mad.
You know who's gonna win? You know, it's like listen, the Warriors are the Western Conference All Stars. I mean, literally, you give them a center from another team, and that's the Western Conference. That's literally a Western Conference All Star starting lineup.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, I get it. You know, and I get what Durant did, but it's like, you know, to me, he lost and he joined the other team that beat him. You know,
it's never. I don't think it's ever happened. Like where the superstar that should have won, they were up 3-1.
Yeah.
Went to the team. I said this. The equivalent would have been if LeBron would have went to the Boston Celtics
when they beat him in
2009.
Twice. Yeah, when, right? Two times or something.
Yeah, that would have been the equivalent of that. And, you know, or if Jordan would have joined the Detroit Pistons, you know,
if Magic would have went to the Celtics.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? If Larry Bird would have went to the Lakers, you know, it's like, it's that thing of like, you know, remember when we were kids and we played baseball and, you know, you'd always play the team down the street or whatever. I played a lot of backyard baseball, so we'd do that. And it's like, if I got beat three times in a row and I was like, I'm going to join my older brother's team because they're the team that's winning. You know, it's like, I felt like that's what he did. He says that isn't what he did, but of course that's what he did. You know, he was one of those guys that praised the Thunder and then went awry, you know? So it's like, I don't know what he's going to do, but it's obviously a good fit for him. And like I said,
yeah,
they're undeniable. I mean, you know, like literally it's, you don't talk about a team where two of the best players can be hurt and they can still beat a team by 38 points.
I think Durant or Curry could be injured
and they'd still be fine.
They would still be the favorites. Yeah.
And they could still probably win the finals.
Yeah. No, I think
that's insane.
Yeah. It's absurd
to think about that.
Well, anyway, we're going to end this podcast on the idea of absurdity. And being upset and we're not wishing that there's an injury, but we would definitely like things to be more interesting. Zach Myers, thank you for being on the X-Men podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Hell yeah, we'll do it again soon.
Yeah, let's do it.
Peace.
And that was the single Devil by Shinedown from their most recent album, Attention, Attention, which came out a couple months ago. And I fucking love that song. It's a banger. And it was fantastic to speak with Zach. He's a really, really cool dude. So talented, so humble, so down to earth. And yeah, definitely check them out. I think they're out with Godsmack right now. And he is the man. And guys, get to what I am so tired right now. It's like 3 a.m. Shot. You know, say it's not Dot Coil. This is Shot Coil. You know, just running out of energy, stumbling, mumbling. It's you know, it's just quite embarrassing. But real quick before I go, I have to shout out our other show sponsor, Rockabilia.com. You know them, you love them. They have 500,000 items. These are the real deal. This is licensed directly from the bands. Right now, I'm currently wearing a Night of the Living Dead t-shirt I got from Rockabilia when I ransacked the warehouse. It is badass. You know what I also tried on? I got this shirt. It was supposed to be for Tommy. Well, actually, no, I'll tell the real story. I found an Aliens shirt. See, there's Alien, right? And Aliens, which the sequel, that's my favorite. And it was XL. Usually I wear a large. So like, oh, I'll get the shirt for Tommy. But it was too small for him. So I got to keep it. So I did that thing where I got something for someone else that I really wanted for myself, and then ended up working out that way. And I wore the Alien shirt, and I got a lot of compliments because that shit is dope. All right. And you too can go get it at rockabilly.com. And you should do that. And you should go over there and buy the exclusive Bad Wolves design we have over there. And you can get 15% off with our discount code PCJabberJaw. Again, that's PCJabberJaw. Thank you guys so much for listening to the show. I really love you. I love the support. Been out on the road, been meeting some X-Men fans. And guys, and guess what? This month just had, again, the biggest month ever in the history of the X-Men show. So give yourselves a round of applause. I do appreciate it. Now I'm going to go get some sleep because I'm eating Doritos and Oreos and Coca-Colas. This is really deplorable. Do better than me, all right? Keep jogging and, you know, doing sit-ups and get on the juice cleanse. Maybe I'll do a juice cleanse. You know, do that shit. I'll get some, where the hell healthy people go? I don't know. I used to be healthy. I don't know what happened, guys. It's just... these days off, you're so tired and shot, you just let go. So I'm going to feel bad about myself for a little bit, and then I'm going to get back on it tomorrow. Going to get back on it. Do it for the team. Right on. And with that sad failure, Mamba's just out. Mamba's out. Sorry, guys. Good night.
This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
Ever wonder what a punch from Elton John feels like?
Or how you'd cope with having turned down the chance to be in Nirvana?
Or what signal Keith Richards gives when he wants you to get the hell out of his hotel room?
Fans of Too Much Effing Perspective don't have to wonder, because they've heard these exact stories and a jillion others on our podcast. I'm Alex Hoffman, former tour manager for Radiohead.
And I'm musician and comedy writer Alan Keller. On the TMEP show, we get guests like Nancy Wilson from Heart, Jeremiah Freights from The Lumineers, and Modern Family's Julie Bowen to tell us things they may have only shared with their therapist, clergy, or a TMZ stringer.
So join us on Too Much Effing Perspective. That's EFFING Perspective, the only podcast you crank up to 11.